Okay, folks, on behalf of Project AIDS International, I'd like to thank you for coming to this press conference. Dr. Wilner, MD, PhD, will be giving an explanation in just a moment on what we're doing here and what he will be doing with our volunteer, who is Kim Freyas, who is an HIV-positive individual. Today, Dr. Wilner will be infecting himself. He will first explain what he will be doing, as well as why he will be doing. Directly after his inoculation, Dr. Wilner will be explaining any questions that you have. There will be a question and answer period. And I would like to take this opportunity to welcome Dr. Wilner.
I don't know if you can hear me without the mic. I can hear it. Okay. And because I've done this needle sticking several times already, I'm familiar with some of the things that are put into the press afterwards. And so I want to make a few things very clear before I even start. I have a certificate in sex education, and I taught for a couple of years at the University of Miami Medical School during Sex Education Week to the medical students. I want to make it perfectly clear that I support responsible sex. I call it responsible sex because it goes much further than the concept of safe sex. And I'm not so sure that I know what safe sex is. During this period of time in which the especially young people of this country have been threatened with AIDS, a death-dealing disease supposedly, as a consequence of irresponsible sexual behavior, the incidence of venereal disease has climbed, and the incidence of births without benefit of marriage has also climbed, but not AIDS. Really very interesting. So this apparently does not have an effect on the sexual behavior of our young people. And I never for once thought that ever would. It never has throughout history. There's only one thing that will affect sexual behavior, and that's understanding what the responsibilities of sex are. That number one, you're dealing with the feelings and emotions and the lives of another human being when you enter into a sexual contract. Number two, you can contract 6 venereal diseases. And number three, an unwanted pregnancy can occur amongst heterosexuals, at least. These are very serious and very important considerations. And the lack of consideration and responsibility in this area creates a cost in human suffering that's incalculable, and a cost in monies that is incredible. So don't anyone out there say that I am for irresponsible sex. But I am against lying to our young people. I am against causing death and destruction through that lie. I am against telling a lie to the young people so that they continue in other behaviors which are truly causing AIDS. Now, you've got to ask yourself the reason that I'm here today. And it's been suggested that I'm here to sell a book called Deadly Deception. There's only two ways that you can get the truth to people. By your own words out of your own mouth, and by putting them on paper. And that's the reason for the book. We're talking about probably the most horrible scandal and scam ever perpetrated, not only in the name of science, but in humanity and in all history. Today is December 7th, and I was 12 years old when the attack on Pearl Harbor came, and I remember World War II very well. And it's a very significant day today because I see an incredible parallel between what is going on in the so-called AIDS epidemic and what happened in the years preceding and resulting in World War II. The great lie of Hitler. It's amazing. I think he would envy the job being done by members of the National Institutes of Health and even the media, especially in this country. I charge the media with part of the responsibility, and a very significant one, in a current Holocaust that can end up being worse than the one that occurred during World War II. When it was first announced that Dr. Robert Gallo had found the virus that probably caused AIDS, and that announcement was made with Margaret Heckler in 1984 to the press and to the media without one single scientific document appearing in any journal in the United States. And as we know now, without any proof whatsoever that the virus caused any disease. The media picked up on it for the sake of a story. And soon the virus that probably caused AIDS was now the virus that caused AIDS. It was proven in the press and nowhere else. Now it's interesting, a lot of questions are asked of me whenever I appear before the cameras and do what some people have called a stunt to sell books. I'm from the planet Earth. I honestly believe that these individuals are from the planet Uranus. How anyone could suggest that I would stick myself with a virus that is supposedly deadly for the purpose of selling a book, that's complete insanity. And I will put the lie to the individuals of the NIH, particularly Gallo and Fauci and Hazeltine and Essex and the rest of these scoundrels of the worst order. Criminals guilty of genocide, without a doubt. I invite them to take me to court. I wish Burroughs Welcome would take me to court because they have been putting out a killer drug knowingly. Because in a court of law, I would have the opportunity to provide the absolute proof and evidence, as I have in my book, Deadly Deception. Now, I'm not alone in what I'm doing here today. How does the press escape such obvious truths? Why would the finest virologist in the world, the most noted virologist, member of our National Academy of Sciences, Peter Duisberg, why would he put his entire career on the line? What did he have to gain? He's already lost his laboratory and his funding. They can't take away his professorship because he's tenured. Why would a Charles A. Thomas, professor emeritus of Harvard, say the same thing? Why would Carrie Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in virology last year, why would he stick his neck out? What did he have to gain? These are the questions reporters should be asking. And in order to sell a book, I would inoculate myself with a virus that supposedly is deadly? Ever think that maybe we all know something that you just don't get? That if you take the virus out of the equation, you have a perfectly understandable disease with a perfectly understandable answer? And I might remind you, in case you are not aware of it, and if you haven't read my book, that we have known what causes acquired immune deficiency diseases for at least 70 years. It's in the medical textbooks. It's there for you to read. Number one cause on the face of this earth is malnutrition and starvation. That's African. Look to the headlines of the October 3rd issue of the London Times, Sunday Times last year. And the inside headlines that screamed across two pages, the plague that never was. Speak to Philip and Evelyn Crinan, who head Partage with an organization of 250 people their own hospital, their own doctors, their own laboratories, who have lived in the heart of the epidemic, supposedly, or the supposed epidemic, for 5 years. There is no epidemic. It doesn't exist. They are there. They're not some character who goes through from the World Health Organization and says, oh, I've seen the people dying. Of course you have. We all saw them on television in Somalia. What do you think you were looking at? That was AIDS, due to starvation, due to malnutrition. It's no big secret what's causing AIDS. We've known it for 70 years. Number two is drugs. And don't just think of street drugs. Because the number one cause of AIDS today is actually two medical drugs. AZT, a drug that was discovered in the 60s as a chemotherapeutic drug for cancer and was shelved because it was too toxic to treat cancer, a drug worse than cancer, is being used to treat people who are immunosuppressed. Now let's go back to the other causes of AIDS. So it's not only street drugs, but medical drugs, but now three is radiation. Whether they worry about it, Chernobyl and Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But number four is chemotherapy. Number four. The number four cause of death of acquired immune deficiency diseases. Chemotherapy. And the most toxic chemotherapeutic drug of all times, AZT, is what they're now using to treat AIDS. And the Concord study, completed last year. Now, can you imagine saying to the world, where was the press? Where are you people? Here they're giving a drug that costs thousands of dollars a year, and it doesn't do any good. That's if you want to believe that. But did anybody here bother to look at the insert, the paper that comes with the drug? It's a DNA terminator. It means it is a terminator, just like the movie. It terminates life. You terminate DNA, you terminate life. And they talk about side effects in the insert. When are you going to learn there is no such thing as a side effect in medicine? It's an unwanted direct effect. And you know what one of the unwanted direct effects of AZT is? Lymphoma, cancer, one of the diseases of AIDS, as they call it. Oh, another so-called side effect, which is really an unwanted direct effect, pancytopenia. You need a definition? Pancytopenia, pan. All cytocells, penia, loss of all your cells. That's AIDS. That is the definition of AIDS. So AZT, by definition, by their own drug insert, causes AIDS, and nobody survives AZT. That will eventually lead to your death. And they've cut the dosage way down because it was killing them too fast. It's like giving somebody a large dose of strychnine and they die within 5 minutes. And so the next person, you give them a few drops of it and they last 4 or 5 days and you say, strychnine's a wonderful drug. This person lasts 5 times longer. This is the kind of thing that they present to the world. Now, I have offered for over a year now, and I continue to offer it, $100,000 to anyone who'll give me one scientific document that proves that HIV causes any serious disease. It doesn't. It is a scandal and a scam beyond belief. The virologists who are responsible for this, what do they have to gain? Now, I don't know what Duisberg had to gain, or Charles A. Thomas, or Carrie Mullis. He already got his Nobel Prize. Why does he come out and say it? And he's the one that found the test, the PCR reaction. And he said that there is no body of evidence that supports that the virus causes any disease whatsoever. But what about the individuals who have perpetrated this lie? They are all multimillionaires. What do we have to say about the National Institutes of Health when a private laboratory, independent laboratory, found AZT to be 1,000 times more toxic than the laboratory of the NIH? We can understand a 5% error in a laboratory, even a 10% error. But a 10,000% error, or 100,000% error, that's fraud. And as I understand it, the word has gone out, and there's even documents and letters to prove it, that the CDC, the same organization that let blacks go untreated with syphilis, well documented, just to see what would happen with the disease. This same organization who had to admit that they can't give in on the AIDS thing now because nobody would ever be able to trust the government. I think the last election tells us what the people think about government. But science is acting no differently than politicians do. And now we have disease by politics. Isn't it strange that the same day or the day after Robert Gallo filed for a test for HIV after it was announced? This sounds like premeditation. You mean he just happened to have this test available? And so the same day or the following day, he files for a patent? He had a test. He was simply looking for some kind of a disease he wanted to apply it to. And that test. 30,000 Russians who tested positive for HIV were then tested with another test that's supposedly far more accurate to confirm the positivity. And 66 out of 30,000 proved to be positive. That means that the test HIV is 99.997% inaccurate. You want to take a test that's 3/1000ths of a percent right? And you're going to rely on that? But that's what they're doing to people out there. They're taking a test that is not only invalid, it's totally misleading. In fact, when you get results like that, then I would say you're going to be more correct that if you're read as being negative, consider yourself positive. And if you're positive, consider yourself negative. By the way, at the request of many individuals, I did go for a test a couple of weeks ago in New York City at the biggest clinic there that does more testing than anybody else. And the doctor who ran it was bragging about the fact that he did more. When I told him about the book I wrote, he said, "Shh, don't say anything. My patients might hear." Okay. I tested negative. And of course, Fauci said that you need, when he was answering what I did in Cleveland a week ago, he said, well, he's going to have to stick himself 300 times to transmit the virus. Where are you people in the press? 300 times to transmit a virus? You cannot have an epidemic under those circumstances. If you can't transmit it by blood, you certainly can't transmit it sexually, unless you're into real sadistic acts during sex. I don't know how much blood you want to draw. It's literally unbelievable what they're getting away with. How does the press let this go? Oh, an epidemic. United States government says 12,000 people died each year from 1985 to 1992. Now, a child in public school will tell you an epidemic starts out in 1 year, you got everybody's involved. That's where they would put it. 12,000 a year for 7 years in a row? That's not epidemic. By definition, it's endemic. And you would expect in 7 years, considering it spreads sexually, that you'd have probably 15 to 20 million. We're a pretty active country when it comes to sex. We like to put it down, but we sure belie it in the behavior that we do. Oh, an epidemic, really. In Russia, 105 deaths from AIDS since 1987. In Philippines, 80 deaths since 1984. Epidemics? There is no epidemic. But who has to gain from this? Dr. Duesberg? What is he gaining from this? That alone should alert the press to who's telling the truth. And if you hear an argument amongst politicians and one calls the other names and doesn't answer the specific charges scientifically, who's the liar? Fauci and Gallo, instead of answering the scientific conflicts and contradictions that Dr. Duesberg has so brilliantly pointed out, instead of answering them, they call him a homophobe. Can you imagine? I've been called a homophobe too. I wonder, I come here with a message of hope to not only the gays, but to the blacks and the Hispanics and all the other outcasts of society, which strangely enough are the only groups that have been connected with the so-called AIDS. Because you see, if you belong to one of those groups, you got AIDS. But if you don't belong to one of those groups, you get the respectable diagnosis of you have tuberculosis, you have lymphoma, you have leukemia, you have Kaposi sarcoma, pneumocystis pneumonia, 30 plus diseases. Where is the press? How do they buy a story that a virus knows what country it's in? 3 symptoms in Africa, but 30 diseases in the United States and Europe. How do they buy the story that a virus has prejudices? It prefers men over women 9-1 in the United States and Europe, but men and women equally in Africa. It knows whether you're gay or straight, married or single, black or white, should be hired by the immigration department because it does one heck of a job. This is what they've been feeding to the public, and this is what you and the press have published. It's funny, every time that I've stuck myself with a needle, I get calls from major television shows by excited young people who want to tell the truth. And then I get a call 3 days later telling me that it's been nixed at a higher level. That's no surprise. After all, who am I fighting? 2 drug industries, one supposedly legitimate and the other illegitimate. And they do an awful lot of advertising, the supposed legitimate ones. All those things out there that they sell for your colds and everything else, that's the pharmaceutical industry. And they also put out prescription drugs, most of them. And they pull the purse strings. And so we have a better propaganda machine in the United States than Hitler had in his time. You see, Hitler pulled off a lie, and he was condemned for it by most of the world, although believed by 3 major groups of the Axis powers. The liars and killers like Fauci and Gallo and Hazeltine and Essex and Flossy von Stahl and the Margaret Fischels, these people are getting by with the lie and getting paid immense sums of money for it and praise from the rest of the world while they murder. The study at the University of Miami was completely fraudulent. You see, I believed that the virus caused AIDS from 1984 to 88, and I treated AIDS patients. One of the few doctors willing to. Doctors were scared for their lives to even treat the patient. By the way, sticking my finger, nothing new. I did it lots of times in treating my AIDS patients. And in fact, it's amazing that in spite of the fact that we are at such great exposure to this deadly disease, the incidence of the disease amongst medical personnel of all types is less than the general population. This is a first in the history of science. Think about that. How is it possible? Maybe the virus has nothing to do with it. Not only maybe, the virus has nothing to do with it. In 1988, I was invited to a dinner where Burroughs Wellcome was going to push AZT as a drug for treating AIDS. And we were told we could ask questions during the dinner because Margaret Fischel was going to be speaking. And when she mentioned that the drug AZT had 56 side effects, I raised my hand. And I said, Dr. Fischel, how do you do a double-blind study on a drug with 56 side effects? You've got to know if you're on the drug. And she said to me and the rest of the doctors sitting there, well, the placebo had 31. And I raised my hand again. How could a placebo have 31 side effects? How could an inert substance have 31 side effects? I didn't know what was wrong then, but I knew there was something wrong. I knew there was something dreadfully wrong, and I didn't know how dreadfully wrong and how deadly wrong it was. But the answer came years later. The FDA, as you probably know, released AZT after 4 months of a proposed 6-month study. They cut it short because one group in this double-blind study where nobody knew who was on what, one group was doing better than another group. And so out of compassion, they terminated the study. I don't blame them for that. And sure enough, the AZT group was doing so much better than the placebo group. And so they released the drug. But then 18 months later, their own investigator from the FDA brought back his report. And guess what it showed? The participants in the study knew the first week who was on the drug and who wasn't. You didn't have a double-blind study. It wasn't the Cadillac of studies. Not only that, some of those on AZT admitted to sharing their drug with members of the placebo group. That explains the 31 side effects in a placebo group. Some of them were taking AZT side effects. But, and by the way, that makes it a complete washout as a scientific study. Right then and there, the drug should have been discontinued, called back. But then came the kicker in this report. The individuals on the AZT in the 4 months of the study received 6 times more blood transfusions than the placebo group. What happens when you get a blood transfusion? You look better, you feel better, and you live a little bit longer. But the most important question and lesson from all of this, you must ask the question, why did those on AZT need 6 times more transfusions in a 4-month period than the individuals on the placebo? Because you're dealing with a killer drug and you need those blood transfusions to survive, and coincidentally they made you look a little bit better and healthier than the other group. And then after I go through all this, invariably somebody's going to ask the question, so what really causes AIDS? And I have to say it 10 times or 20 times in my book, and I'm going to say it again now. We have known for 70 years why the other individuals in the study died. The number one cause is malnutrition and starvation. Well, to an extent that was true of some of these individuals, but only true because of the second reason. The number two cause is drugs. You recall, you fellows and gals in the press, a couple of weeks ago you reported in your newspapers that we were killing off our senior citizens with too many drugs. And how do you cure them? You get them off the drugs. And how were these people dying of so-called AIDS? From the number two cause, drugs, both medical and street drugs. But one in particular that stood out and has been linked by 24 scientific papers with Kaposi sarcoma, and that's poppers or amyl nitrite. It's very rare that you see a case of Kaposi sarcoma in Africa because they don't use poppers. And this is the first disease, human disease, we can't give to a simian monkey. And I'm talking about legitimate diseases. Because you see, the virologists have been coming up with more diseases than you can imagine. And haven't you bothered to notice? Most of them never pan out. They disappear from the headlines. And they're never heard of again. Because they weren't diseases really in the first place. Like SMON, a disease in Japan. For 15 years, they pursued viruses. And what did it turn out to be? Enteroviriform, a drug for diarrhea that they were using over there. Amazing, isn't it? And they spent 15 years and lots of millions of dollars, but guess what our virologists have done? Wow, they hold a candle to no one. For 20 years in Nixon's war on cancer, they spent over $20 billion looking for a virus that caused cancer. And they came up empty-handed. They not only couldn't find a retrovirus, which was the ideal choice because it doesn't kill cells, and it's multiplied by the cells, which is what cancer cells do, but they never found any disease that it caused. But guess what they chose for the scam of AIDS? A retrovirus. Already $20 billion in 20 years, we found nothing that it does. And we also found that absolutely it doesn't kill cells, because if it did, it would commit suicide. It needs the cell in order to replicate, to be alive. So the epidemic would be over before it began. It's impossible. But this is the virus. They've just spent another $20 billion in only 10 years' time. And they're asking for more. And now they want to give us a vaccine. See? Oh, will they make money with that? They not only have a test for HIV, which, by the way, is not for the virus, it's for immunity. Like I say, it's the first disease in the history of medicine. When you're immune to it, you're going to die from it. But now, they want to give us a vaccine. The test HIV tests for antibodies, not for the virus. Well, antibodies is what you get when you use a vaccine. You want to produce antibodies to fight the disease. I'm at a loss to understand. If we already have the antibodies, why do we want to create the antibodies? Kind of redundant, isn't it? Oh, by the way, if you take these very same antibodies and you put them in Gallo's culture, in his laboratory, you just ruined his multi-million dollar culture that he's making a fortune out of. Because you see, these antibodies destroy the culture. Does the press bother reading? Do they understand the English language? And yet you want to condemn me and say that I'm out for publicity? Well, what is it that Peter Duesberg is out for? He held the reputation, and still amongst honest scientists, as being the foremost virologist in the world. What is Carrie Mullis out for? He just won the Nobel Prize. Why does he want to put at risk that incredibly marvelous reputation of being a Nobel Prize winner? Why would he put that at risk? Unless maybe there are still some honest scientists around. Now, what about the rest of them out there? You know, I often ask myself the question, if my children were still in school and I had house payments to make and I had to put them through school, etc., would I be doing what I'm doing today? I don't think I've ever answered the question because I'm kind of afraid of what I might answer if I was going to answer honestly. And he who is without sin shouldn't be casting any stones. So I won't cast the stones at the thousands and thousands and thousands of virologists out there who are going along with this scam. Because you see, they would be out of jobs if they dared criticize Margaret Heckler or the heads of the NIH. They'd be out of jobs and they'd have families that they have to support and futures that would be down the drain. You don't cross the establishment. And so the lie is being perpetuated by the silence. And even Gallo would say to the press in answer to the question, what does he have to say about Duisberg's challenges? And he says, well, if we're wrong, why do so many people believe us? I mean, I could just see Hitler and his stormtroopers saying to the press, if we're wrong, why does everybody do what we tell them to do? Because they're running the show, and you're looking at not just a simple lie of science. In the back of my book, I have the picture of Pedro Tesino of Spain, father of two young girls, a hemophiliac. Nothing wrong with the man. But because he received so-called tainted blood, they had him on AZT. I stuck myself to get that man off AZT. I said, if I stick myself with your blood, will it convince you there's nothing to worry about? And Pedro Tesino, now over a year later, is very healthy, having a wonderful life, enjoying his two young daughters. But all of his friends are dying or are dead. This is real. And I don't blame those scientists out there keeping their mouths shut because their jobs depend on it. And I understand that exists in the press too. But you've got organizations. And in a way, so do the virologists have organizations. And if enough of the honest ones would stand up and take that chance, if you all stand together, you make a statement. And you can do that in your press associations, even though the people who own the newspapers and the television shows are afraid of losing their sponsors, you can at least keep your dignity. That's the choice you have to make. And that's the choice that I have had to make. I figured that if I didn't do what I knew was right, I'd end up cutting my throat shaving in the morning because I wouldn't be able to live with myself. And that's the honest, simple truth. I am sticking my finger to bring attention to the current Holocaust, and it's a dreadful one. When you terminate the DNA of a human being, they waste away and die in an inhuman fashion. We all have the right to die with dignity. But if we told them the truth, a lot of them wouldn't die at all. They'd simply get off the poppers and off the drugs. And there's no dishonor in being gay and admitting that you've been on drugs. The decent human beings in this world will give you the support and help you, like we help drug addicts of all followings, so to speak. Those that would turn against you have turned against you anyway, because of what you feel and what you are. And there are even some religious groups who have turned against the gays and said it was God's vengeance. How can you believe in a loving God and believe that that God would cause such a terrible disease amongst humans? Now, this is a man-caused disease, but we all make mistakes in life, and that shouldn't stop the compassion and the love and the understanding of decent human beings. And so I do the act of sticking my finger and create another blood brother in my life, as the ancient Indians have done, and I will get another one today, because I'm not afraid of getting AIDS. I know as a scientist that there is nothing to fear. I know what causes AIDS. I am not going to lie to others nor myself about it. I don't like sticking myself with a needle because it hurts. And if you've ever seen my expression on pictures, you know that to be true. So, Kim Freitas. Kim, are you here?
Yeah.
We're going to become blood brothers.
Yeah.
And please, to the press and to everyone else, I don't intend to stick myself 300 times because it wouldn't prove anything anyway. Oh, and might I say that a Dr. Gottlieb, who achieved fame for being the doctor that noted the first four or five cases of AIDS, who said to me on a radio broadcast the other night, he would believe me if I took a liter of blood. That's a transfusion of blood. And I said, you know, you must be mad. What is that going to prove? If you need a liter of blood to get AIDS, then nobody's going to get AIDS.
That's right.
Yeah. In any case, well, I got to do myself first, and then I have to do you. Here, but let me do your finger, okay? I mean, I got to do you first, right?
All right.
Excuse me. Then I'm going to do me. Excuse me, I had that backwards. All right. Wait a minute. I got to find. This is a heck of a time to lose my needle. There we go. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a typical butterfly needle set. If somebody has a scissor, it'll help. No, I got it. Okay. It's sterile. And usually we use it to take blood by sticking this in, and then we can inject things also. So, let's do that. We got this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to... let me put my glasses on, okay?
Good.
I think you'd rather I do that. I got to tell you a cute little story. Shortly after my son was born many years ago, he's now 40, he got some kind of an infection or whatnot, and I spoke to the pediatrician at the hospital. I was an intern at the time, and he said, go home and give him a shot of penicillin. So I took the syringe and everything home, and my wife held Bruce over her shoulder, and I grabbed his little bottom cheek, and I go like this, and I stuck it right into my thumb, so.
Careful.
You can tell I don't like doing this, never have. Okay. We want to get a lot of blood. There we go. Okay? There we go. Now, I'm wiping this needle thoroughly in this blood, and I say to my friends Fauci and Gottlieb and Galpin and Gallo and all the rest of those criminals,
Broda.
All right, that this is for the sake of humanity and no other reason.
Oh, whoa, whoa. Right.
And believe me, it hurts. And this is in the hope that it'll save the lives of millions of individuals who will die because of the greatest lie ever told.
Thank you.
Get off drugs is right. Get off drugs. Now, I will be happy to take questions from the press or from anyone for that matter to clarify in your minds if there's any doubt whatsoever. Yes.
You said, I have several questions actually. You said that you were tested in New York by a leading physician there. Can you say where that was and by whom?
Yes, it was in the Greenwich Village area. In fact, Karen, I think you have the issue of the Native. That ad should be in the back of the Native. If you'll get it, we'll give you the name and the address of the clinic, because it's widely advertised. And that's where I went, where everybody else is going. And he's recognized by the state of New York, and the forms he uses, which I filled out, are from the state of New York. And by the way, I do have a copy of the document, which states that and he gives you the answer to the test in 15 minutes. So it's quite a racket. And by the way, it's very interesting because that you asked the question, because you see, I was in a quandary as to what possible purpose could this serve. If you have a test that's 99.997% inaccurate, what are you proving? You would treat somebody with a deadly drug on the basis of a test that's totally worthless. And by the way, let me point out that a research group in Australia in the past year have stated that not only is the test completely inaccurate, it's totally nonspecific. That you could be positive if you had the measles, if you had the flu, if you had a flu shot from your doctor, or if you had any one of 100 diseases. Let's look at the scenario. This is serious business.
Yeah.
Somebody gets the flu. or gets a flu shot this year.
But so what you're finally suggesting is that the man that you, this prominent physician in Greenwich Village, he in fact said, don't tell anybody about this because I'm making money off of these tests. Are you finally saying to people, don't get tested?
I am saying absolutely do not get tested. Would you advise anybody to take a test that's 99.997% wrong?
And you're saying that...
That's insanity. And by the way, when I said to this physician, when he asked me why I was there, and I told him I was a doctor, I said, because I'm in a heavy risk group. He said, aren't we all? And laughed about it. Because everybody knows that the medical profession sticks itself all the times, and the only individuals who are going to die of AIDS who are part of the medical profession in any way, shape, or form are those who are taking AZT or other drugs. Go ahead.
You said that AIDS is not an epidemic, it's an endemic circumstance caused by a variety of factors, including malnutrition and drug use. How then can you explain the years of potential life loss in the 250,000 plus people who have died of AIDS, according to CDC definition, where drug use has been going on for centuries, and suddenly we're losing people in their 20s and 30s because I'm not sure what you're...
Okay, that's an excellent question, really, and you're using your head. That's the kind of question you should have been asked of Gallo at the very beginning. And by the way, you said 20s and 30s are healthiest people. Isn't it strange? You got a disease, the first disease in the history of mankind, that affects our healthiest? But what happened in the 60s? The drug culture began. What happened in the 70s? It heated up. At the end of the 70s, the gays came out of the closet and became an identifiable group. Now, I'll ask you, in the sense of redundant question, but I think it'll get the point across. I'm going to name five of 30 diseases. Tuberculosis, a new disease. Lymphoma, oh, that's a new disease too. Leukemia, oh yes, that's a very new disease too. Pneumocystis pneumonia, another new disease, but lesser known. And Kaposi sarcoma, another new disease? No. These diseases and the other 25 have always been around. It's real easy, it's real simple to create an epidemic. You simply take a bunch of diseases and put them under one heading and then claim that one virus is responsible for it. Well, that's nonsense. First of all, let me offer the proof. The reason it appeared, which I think is the essence of your question, as though it were some new epidemic coming on, is because it appeared in a select population, the gay population. But it only is appearing in gays who are on drugs. Only. And especially, and substance abuse, right. And remember, by the way, too, that alcohol is a drug. And remember, these individuals, many of them, extremely promiscuous, would get one venereal disease after another, and they'd be taking antibiotics for these diseases all year long. And it's a matter of medical fact that antibiotics are immune suppressive. Now, let me offer one very important bit of investigative reporting for you. It was reported in the newspapers a couple of years ago that this HIV was found in blood that had been preserved in laboratories in the 1940s. They went back and looked at some of these samples. They found HIV, which, by the way, has been around certainly for thousands of years. But let's just use that one example. If we had HIV in the population in the 1940s, and we had homosexuals in the 1940s, and by the way, according to Kinsey, 10 to 15% of the heterosexual population preferred anal intercourse, where in the world was your epidemic? It wasn't suitable for a scoundrel like Robert Gallo in the 1940s. He wasn't old enough, or maybe he was born just about that time, for somebody to come along and to pull off a scam of this magnitude. And now they're caught up in a maelstrom. Now if the truth gets out, yes, it will deal a blow to the credibility of the NIH and the CDC and the FDA and the AMA, and my God, it is sorely needed. Yeah. That blow is necessary to clean up the act.
Habitual lifetime drug users all eventually come down with a syndrome that could be attributable to AIDS?
Absolutely. In fact, these people, that is true. No, on the contrary. Remember, it's dose related. So it depends upon how many drugs you're using and how much of them over how long a period of time. Now, if you overdose, you never get to that point. Yes.
Couldn't the combination of lifestyle practices of microbial, the best place for microbes are dark, wet places. Aren't bath houses an excellent place to increase the exponential representation of microbes around the world? If men who have had sex with 1,000 other men through the year have contact with those same men who are themselves are very similar, do you think that that adds an incredible amount of immune suppression that is not suffered by the rest of the population who does drugs or those other things?
Well, I don't know. You see, the Romans and the Greeks had bathhouses, and there's no evidence that... Pardon me?
Not with ecstasy, MDA, poppers, and all the things that were going on.
I agree that MDA and all the rest of these drugs are causing immune suppression. Now, I don't believe that sex itself causes immune suppression, but I do believe that recurring venereal disease will cause immune suppression. But the simple fact is that the virus has nothing to do with it, and that's the important thing. That I am certainly for people having a healthy lifestyle. Absolutely. But let's not get into the idea that this is, again, a contagious disease. You cannot give AIDS to anyone, and you cannot get AIDS from anyone. Yes, Michael Elner.
Would you consider the intense chronic psychological terrorism surrounding HIV and AIDS to be a major cause of what's called immune deficiency?
22 years ago, I urinated pure blood without pain. I knew immediately what the diagnosis was. It was bladder cancer. I cannot fully describe what I felt at that moment. It is unbelievable. It's like taking a crash dive into the depths of anonymity, total isolation, fear, and panic. And all the faith in God or whatever faith you may have cannot handle that at that moment. When you start to get your wits together, and if you use your intelligence and then your faith, yes, spirit and mind are wonderful things. What you're saying is true. It's a sentence of death for most people. And immediately, their body metabolism goes into negative phases. Everything becomes destructive. This is modern medical voodoo. If a doctor tells you, you are going to die, I'm willing to bet you're going to die. I'll be the first one to put money on the line and say, the chances are you're going to beat the statistics. You will die because you've been told so. This is American voodoo. I'll get back to you, but let me take someone else.
Yes, Dr. Wilner, I really appreciate what you're doing. I've been out here trying to inform people about this disinformation for a number of years now. Robert Gallo, who is a proven medical fraud and a multimillionaire marketing a test, the AMA itself, in its own medical journals in the 80s, have said that these tests are bad science. The microbiologists have said in their own medical texts that this is bad science, these tests do not work. The hematologists have said that this is false, these tests. They say that they have used ozone to inactivate HIV, which HIV, if it's a virus, it's a template or a pattern, so what can it do? I mean, these are just basic medical facts. How is it that this has gotten by the entire population? And the media is pushing this lie. Arthur Ashe, for example, was on 30 pills a day the 3 months before he succumbed, including AZT. How is that not iatrogenics? And how is it that the medical profession can murder a million people a year, according to their own study, the Yale New Haven study that came out this year? They admit to killing a million people a year. Why aren't they on trial? That's my question.
By the way, I thank you for your comments, and I'd love to have a copy of that study and some of the information you talked about. I really would, because I've been going around saying it's the number three cause of death is iatrogenic disease. And when I lecture before groups, I don't tell them what iatrogenic disease is. And I say to them, you know, here we're worried about this so-called AIDS epidemic, and I don't believe that anybody should die. I think we should all live forever. But 12,000 a year, that's not an epidemic. 60,000 die from automobile accidents. 120,000, I've been saying, and I hope you're going to help me change, 120,000 die each year, they admit to, from iatrogenic disease, 500,000 from cancer, and 800,000 from heart disease. And I'm glad you're telling me it's a million, because I've been saying, they say it's number three. I really believe in my heart it's number one.
Deepak Chopra says sure. The number one cause of...
I agree with him. Absolutely. Now, if we took the figure of 120,000 being killed by doctors, not malpractice, but as a normal course of everyday medicine, then doctors are 10 times more dangerous than HIV. Now you're telling me it's 100 times.
100 times.
Yeah, I want those figures really desperately.
1964,
please.
They admitted 350,000 in 1964.
Well, I will be indebted because that's powerful stuff, and I really, you know, it's funny. You never know where the figures are going to go, but with medicine, anything's possible. Yes, that. Pardon me.
Just the USA?
Just the USA.
Ralph Nader did an article, by the way, in Penthouse, that talks about those issues.
Yes, ma'am.
I had a comment that yesterday. C. Everett Koop announced that 300,000 Americans die annually from diseases and illnesses related to being overweight. So I don't know how that multiplies out, but it would certainly be a lot more dangerous to be overweight than to be HIV infected.
You know, that's a very good point. Yes. There you go. Thank you. That's a very good point. You know, I pick up some marvelous ideas from some very bright people, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I'm going to be using those. Do I have your permission? Oh, okay.
Could you give some insight on how this mechanism works with pediatric AIDS?
Oh, okay. That is another good question. First of all, I challenge anybody, except there are always exceptions, and the exceptions are, of course, as we know, genetics. And children sometimes born under circumstances where we don't have all the facts, but I would say 99% or better of the individuals born with AIDS, if they actually have AIDS, the mother was a crack mother, was on drugs, no question about it, or had obvious incredible immune suppression for what other medical reasons,
well,
as they say.
I'm thinking of particular is Elizabeth Glazer, and her child got it from her. She had a blood transfusion before the birth of the first child. It was with tainted blood at Cedars-Sinai. She then passed it on to her child.
She passed on HIV.
The story, yeah.
Okay, let's call things HIV, not AIDS.
Right.
Now what happened?
The child, after about 3 years, got very sick. They didn't know what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor said nobody knows what it is. They finally did an HIV test on the child, found out that she had it, and then she died. Ariel died.
But there's a gap there. Mm-hmm. They found out she's HIV positive, and then she died. How much time, and what was done in that period of time?
Right. I can't answer that question.
I mean, listen, I was in the practice of general medicine for a lot of years. I had one of the largest practices in the state of Florida. And I can tell you, I treated a lot of kids over a period of time that got very ill in their first 3 years of life. You mean they had AIDS?
The test that they had.
Now, they did a test. I will guarantee you, I don't know what she died of, and I can't answer it, but I will tell you, these kids who are diagnosed as HIV, if they're given AZT, they will die of AIDS. Absolutely. Most of them will not die, just like most of the kids I treated did not die. But I had an occasional child that ended up with a meningitis and died. By the way, our current Miss America, who's deaf and dumb, got DPT. That's what made her deaf and dumb.
What is SIDS?
Yes, sudden infant death syndrome. Yes, now we'll go back to you. Go ahead.
How do you explain then the T cell decline in those who have not taken AZT and are not psychologically at effect, you know, don't believe it to be a...
Wonderful question. Really great. Now let me tell you a little bit about medicine. See, I was always confused by this T-cell thing, because T-cells are nothing more than lymphocytes and leukocytes. they're our body's way of fighting infection. Now, when somebody came into my office with a bellyache, I would do a white count, which includes the T cells. Now, if the white count was like 5, 6, 7,000, didn't think anything of it. There's a bellyache, some bad food, maybe a viral infection, you know, the great dumping ground viruses. They even had me thinking that way. But if it was 20,000, I alerted a surgeon. You see, the body creates the T cells when it needs it. If you don't need it, you don't got it. Why would you walk around with a lot of T cells when you've got nothing to fight? And I can tell you one thing we have always known. There is no correlation between severity of disease in AIDS, so to speak, and the T cell count. It doesn't match up, and I'll tell you why. You look a little bit confused when I said the fact that you will not have a high white count unless you have a severe infection. However, which means that if you don't have a high white count, it's not bad. If there's nothing else wrong with you, then I'd say, well, that's normal. Why do you want a high white count? If you got a bad cold, you'd get an elevation in your white count. Now, we know for a fact, it's well documented, that you have individuals who have died with AIDS with elevated T cells. And we have individuals who've been healthy. And when I tell you healthy, I feel sick by comparison at looking at some of these individuals. And they test out incredibly well. The best, healthiest specimens I've seen, the kind that most women say, oh my God, why is he gay? You see? Because he's so good looking and so handsome and so strong and so healthy, you see? They have no T cells.
So T cells, you don't count T cells as a barometer of how one is...
No, because you can use it to some degree as a barometer, depending upon the situation, but basically, no, you can't, and I'll tell you why. You know that you can change the T cell count if you worry somebody? Completely established. I worry about these individuals who go in and get these T cell counts one after another. Because their whole life is focused on these T cell counts. And when it goes down a little bit, instead of being reassured, which is the way I would interpret it, they get panicky. Now they're really doing damage. And at some point, if they're on drugs, and sometimes even if they're not on anything, but because they've been told they're going to die, like the witch doctors of Africa and elsewhere, these individuals will die because they literally worry themselves to death. It's a crime beyond belief. They're the rare ones, I admit. But the fact is, T cell counts absolutely have no correlation with severity of disease. They can be low because you have wiped out your immune system, and they can be low because you don't need them. That's the important thing to understand. It is not a barometer for anything. And they lie, they lie, they lie, and then they lie some more.
Is this a real case scenario? I go in, I get tested, I am told I'm HIV positive, my T cell count could, I've heard from cancer research, be cut in half. In other words, 50% of your T cells go on strike, the other 50 keep working.
I got news for you, the other scenario can happen too. It can go wild, go way up.
Yeah, but if it goes down because I'm told I'm going to die, isn't that enough to get me on AZT?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And once below.
First of all, let me tell you something. The CDC that let syphilitics untreated, when they had drugs that could have treated, just to observe, this same CDC has already admitted that between 40% and 60% of the cases listed at AIDS were never even tested for HIV. And not that it makes any difference, because the test is meaningless.
So could this scenario also happen? I take AZT, because it is a foreign invader, my T cells will go up.
Yes, they initially do. And that's exactly what happens. When you challenge the immune system, which AZT does, you get an initial rise. But then the AZT begins to do its dirty work and suppresses your entire reproduction of your T cells, and eventually it goes through the floor. Absolutely. That is the scenario. Yes, we're going to try to finish one or two more of your questions.
You say that HIV is somewhere in this. You say that HIV itself is a harmless tissue. It's an innocuous retrovirus. Are you then saying that, as you said earlier about you don't know what safe sex is, that if I go back and report to my gay and lesbian readers, young gay men in particular, and there has been a rise in incidence among young gay men of HIV, again, with the test that you don't believe in.
Right.
But,
well, it means nothing. Until you give me one single document that proves HIV causes anything, it's meaningless.
Okay. But what I need to, here's what I need
yes.
to know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is HIV sexually transmitted?
No.
Shall I go and report to these young gay men that they need not worry about
okay.
practicing safe?
HIV, this harmless virus, can be sexually transmitted with incredible difficulty to the point where it becomes meaningless. All right?
And that hasn't been definitely proven.
By the way, in one of the studies which they were presenting of 25 males where the semen was examined who were HIV positive, they were able to demonstrate only in 2 out of 25 the virus, and they only found 1 in a million cells. That is not disease. There's no way in the world, and especially with a virus, a retrovirus that supposedly is killing off the cells it needs in order to replicate, even if you transmitted one virus, and it did kill off, and it was this terrible disease you say it is, there's no way it could cause disease. It's impossible. The lie is so compounded and so idiotic and so unbelievable that you literally have to fight your way out of the maze of these lies. They are all unadulterated lies, and the men responsible for them, and women, belong in jail. Yes, and then we'll get...
Arthur Ashe, Magic Johnson, and Ms. Glazer, the late Ms. Glazer, were all unable to infect their partners,
yeah.
even though they had years of unsafe behaviors.
Rock Hudson's lover.
So there's yeah. considerable evidence that this is not the case. You know, they say you have to inject yourself 300 times your IV drug user and they're given free needles to protect them. No one says that the drugs might cause AIDS. And in our experience in New York, but certainly the largest population of AIDS cases, there is a clear-cut thing that anyone looking at it will find. The people using drugs develop the diseases called AIDS, and the people who aren't recover their health. It's that simple.
Yes, and by the way, for that population that you're writing for, let me simply point out, again using the government's figures, they say it takes an average of 1,000 acts of intercourse over 10 years in the United States and 10,000 acts of intercourse over 10 years in Africa to transmit the AIDS virus. That's twice a week in the United States for 10 years on an average to transmit the virus. In Africa, that's 20 times a week on an average. And if you know what the bell curve is, there's got to be some individual out in Africa that's doing it 200 times a week. I want to meet that individual. And now let me give you a set of figures which you must produce for your readers, please. The World Health Organization says that the annual conversion rate in the United States for HIV is 1 to 1.5% a year. Now, according to the figures given us by the CDC, there are constantly, for 10 years now, 1 million HIV positives in the United States. Now, that defies all definitions of an epidemic. How does it stay steady at 1 million if this is an epidemic that's going to kill everybody? And by the way, their predictions from 10 years ago were 91% wrong as far as deaths were concerned. Think of that. Now, hold on. 1 to 1.5% per year would average out to 67.5 years. For everybody who's HIV positive in the United States today to become full-blown AIDS. That's the annual conversion rate, published, not by me, by the World Health Organization. But in Haiti, it's one-tenth that. So if you're HIV positive, I would advise all your readers to go to Haiti. They got a 10 times better chance of survival if they go to Haiti. Because there it will take 1,000 years for everybody, this is World Health Organization figures, for everybody who's HIV positive today to become full-blown AIDS. But hold your hats, hold the presses, young lady. Tell your readers this, and I quote the World Health Organization. Maybe I should put my hand like this while I say it. But they say that in Zaire, you have 100 to 150 times better chance of survival if you're in Zaire than if you live in the United States. In other words, there, it will take 25,000 years for everybody who's HIV positive today to become full-blown AIDS. Now, I think you ought to urge your readers, all those with compassion and with heart, to take the first plane to Zaire and to stop anyone on the street and ask them, are you HIV positive? And if they answer in the affirmative, I think you owe it to them as a conscientious human being to say, sir or madam, are you aware that in the next 25,000 years, you're liable to die of AIDS? Those are government figures, they are not mine. The ridiculousness of it demands that you print those figures, that they give them to your readers.
Art, isn't it interesting that Africa and Haiti have similar situations in North America and Europe? Although Africa is closer to Europe, you would think that infectious spread would spread closer to the center of the origin.
The answer is very simple. Malnutrition and starvation can lead to death, and at a very variable rate depending upon the malnutrition. But AIDS due to drugs is a much shorter period of time.
And iodoconazole, it's a drug from Ciba Geigy, or no, LaRouche, I think.
Uh-huh.
They've been injecting people in Zaire and Angola and in Haiti with this iodoconazole since the 1970s. And this is a hepatic drug. This kills the liver. And the liver is your biggest filter of your blood in the body. And if you destroy the liver, it has more than 500 functions in the body, then you're dead.
By the way, let me throw out, I think, an overall principle to take a look at very seriously from the point of view of disease and death. And this applies to AIDS as it would apply to any disease problem in humanity. And with this, I'm going to end. The bubonic plague killed half the population of Europe. The question you must ask and must answer, if you're going to be a rational thinking human being, is why didn't it kill the other half? In the United States, in 1919, 18 million people died of the flu. My question is, why didn't the other 92 million die? The answer to that, and every reporter owes it to their readers, is very simple. The bugs do not cause the disease unless there's a suitable terrain. And so the answer to all disease is not to take a shotgun and blow a human being apart, but to simply prevent the disease to begin with by living at peace and in harmony, not only with your fellow human beings, but with every organism on this planet. And thank you.